There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 40, continuing our pocket-by-pocket ADP analysis, heading ADP 250 to 300, where, yes, as you expect, things are getting murky. Things are getting a little different compared to the earlier episodes, but hey, you know, Ryan and I are in a DC right now, and yeah, it's murky. That's a nice way to put it. Before we get into all the fun of the ADPs and more, you can find myself on Twitter at BDEntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host is always on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan, how we doing, my friend?
I'm ready to roll tonight, man. I did all the fatherly duties with the kids this evening. Got the lunches packed. Got the little Valentine's cards written out for each of their little classmates at daycare, and I've earned all the dad points, and I'm ready to podcast. So I'm doing great. Indeed.
Good to hear. Yes, you did all the dad things, checked all the boxes. I barely got mine to bed before this started. That was fun. Like you had the making lunches and doing I would have traded you in 2 seconds compared to a screaming child that did not want to go to bed. Yeah. That was just what, especially as anyway with a kid, and Ryan knew immediately, like when they're really not screaming and like they're just playing with you because they don't want to go to bed. That's the worst. That's the single worst thing because you know they're just being full of it. So yeah, that was fun for about 25 minutes tonight.
Sandwiches, chips, fruit.
Much better.
They don't cry at you.
Much better. So, but we're here. We're with you on a Thursday night. Hope you guys enjoyed the Sunday night episode that came at you. Hint, hint. There will be a Sunday post Super Bowl show this week.
Yes,
with a guest doing some fun stuff. So just throwing it out there to you. It's coming. So. It's going to be a fun Sunday night, but we have Thursday for you. We'll kind of tease Sunday some more, and there will be tweets about it, but it's going to be a thing, and it's going to be awesome. It's the best way I can put it. And put your kids to bed before you tune in. Just going to throw it out there. It's going to be wild.
We're diving into baseball season, and it could be carnage. But
it could be carnage fun. Between the waste management and the Super Bowl and our – wonderful time and fun of the day. It's going to be a good one. But let's get into – it's been fun, actually. There hasn't been a lot of recent news lately, but you told me via text, and it's very true. Pitchers and catchers report next week, so floods of news will be coming in. Yep. And then you have WBC stuff that's going to screw all of spring training up, so that's going to be fun as well. But the biggest news is Aaron Ashby is going to be – I wouldn't say shut down is the word, but going to get a late start to spring training – because of shoulder fatigue, kind of what sounds like Zach Wheeler had last year. But that's probably the best case scenario. We've seen other scenarios where it doesn't turn out so well. So what's your thoughts on this one? Because they are already slow playing his innings anyways. This is a great way to slow play his innings. But it makes it tough to push that draft button right now with that uncertainty on the board.
Yeah, and I think now we know why Milwaukee signed Wade Miley a few weeks ago. Actually, I forget where I saw it on Twitter, but there was actually a video clip at, I think it was like the Brewers Fan Fest or something, where they interviewed Ashby and he kind of alluded to this a little while ago. So It's a huge bummer. Ashby, we've talked about him on the show, was one of those like super high ceiling starters that we maybe a week or two ago we talked about. It's funny you bring up the Zach Wheeler thing, Bubba, and we've talked about this. Same with like Luis Castillo. Is it something where Ashby is, and there's a difference, is he currently hurt? Is his shoulder currently messed up, or is he just delayed? I think there's a difference there. Last year, Zach Wheeler, Luis Castillo were delayed. Castillo missed the first month. Wheeler really didn't miss much time, a week or two. And both of those guys had great seasons. So I'm not totally, it's funny, like the first, like any, like we're all just itching for news right now. Like it's the calm before the storm of pitchers and catchers next week. And I think we, you know, everyone's reacting to this first bit of news. I'm keeping Ashby on my radar, especially like if labor mixed draft, which is going to be February 21st. I've got the sixth pick there. They've got unlimited IL slots. Aaron Ashby is absolutely still on my board in terms of a draft. And even in leagues, like even in NFBC leagues where you can fab, like, I don't know, a 28th, 29th round, Aaron Ashby, worst case, you cut him and you move on. That's the kind of end gamer I like. So I'm still keeping track of Aaron Ashby. I want to get a little more info whether he's actively hurt or if he's just behind. Because if he's just behind, yeah, I don't think that's necessarily a reason to totally stay away.
That's where I'm at. Like, some people pointed to the injury last season that kind of slowed him down. Maybe this is a lingering effect. Yep. But then again, after the last injury, he came back and pitched. And so I was kind of like, well, we got that. So I'm trying to stay positive here. It is February 9th, as you mentioned. When pitchers and catchers report, there's going to be more people than you'd expect that have shoulder fatigue or arm fatigue at some point, because that's just natural for being shut down and then ramping back up. And that's why they ramp up the way they do ahead of time and do this. Again, it could be worse than it is. Who knows? But to just throw it off the board, you know, could be a bad move. Could be a great move. We'll see. It's tough to tell at this point in time. I'm not a doctor. I did not stay at a Holiday Inn Express. So I can't really help you with either one of those scenarios.
The one thing, like, there will be more Aaron Ashbys. There are guys, I talked about this a lot last year with the lockout. It's a little bit less accentuated like that. Like, yeah, pitchers and catchers report next week. That's all great. The pessimistic side is we're going to get to find out who we've been drafting these last 2 months that are actually hurt and show up to camp and are injured. So just kind of brace yourselves for things like that. And really, we've all been, at least people who are drafting early, we've all been looking at similar rankings, similar projections, similar ADP for the last few months. Be aggressive in changing though. Like, don't get too set in the ways on how these guys have been ranked the last 2 months, because a lot is going to change when the news really starts, when that fire hose hits in this next week or two. So don't be afraid to, if someone's going to win a starting job or the manager says they're going to win a starting job, bump up that projection aggressively and not get so set in your pre draft season rankings.
Yes, I 100% agree. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch it all go and watch Twitter explode if you have a blue check mark, apparently. So we'll see how that one goes.
Any on your Gladiators, Bubba? Any Aaron Ashby?
Nothing I'm aware of. Okay. I kind of stopped checking them after Trevor Story went out on all three of them. So, but then we laugh now, but kind of what you're saying, there might be a lot of more Trevor Stories coming up during the next 2 weeks. So everyone that was, you know,
I don't think your Gladiator teams are they're half they could pull an Undertaker.
They could pull an Undertaker 100%. Right now they're that meme with the monkey with the air in its nose, but it could go full Undertaker. We'll see what happens. Can I ask you, I told you I like to read your speculator column when I go have my lunch during the week. Can I ask you about one pitcher in there? Or is that against the rules because of the paywall?
That is not against the rules. Go ahead.
Okay. Because I did a screenshot to remind myself of it, because there's a lot of great pitchers in this column. And I even tweeted it out like sarcastically to Ryan today about it's a great article. But I didn't know. It was more me asking you if you saw anything when you researched it. So you have the Shane McClanahan blurb. Mm-hmm. And you showed his pitch mix change. And you highlighted, obviously, the changeup change, which is amazing, one of the best changeups in baseball, which you talked about. But when I look at the pitch usage chart, he basically almost a 20% drop in his slider, but his slider still had such a great swinging strike and ground ball rate. I doubt it came out just looking at the numbers, like you were saying, but I'm just curious, why did he drop something that was so good? That's like, if he could combine that with a changeup and then maybe mix the curve and the four seam, good God, what we'd have on our hands.
Yeah. So what this article is actually, which one of my favorite ones to write, I'm terrible at marketing. So I made up a terrible metric called change score. It's basically zero to 100. How much did a pitcher change their pitch mix from 2021 to 2022? If they overhauled everything, all new pitches, it's 100. They stayed the same, it's a zero. So basically I compared pitch usage from 21 to 22, took the guy and just ranked him. And so McClanahan popped, he had a 50% change in his mix. And the thought being is like, and we talk about this with evaluating pitchers, and you talk about it with Toby all the time, is like, be quicker to react to, you know, if there is a breakout, if there is a change in skill with a pitch mix change, tend to believe the more recent, you know, have that recency bias with pitchers. And so that's what McClanahan did. And yeah, it was the changeup. It's a good point. I actually didn't even pick up on that, Bubba, in the article. So McClanahan threw that changeup a ton, 25% of the time in 2022, 8% in 21. It's one of the best pitches in the game. But he faded another one of the best pitches in the game.
That's my question. You probably don't have the answer because we're not like in his locker room. But if anybody, like, I might need to ask Collette this one. Like, I'm just curious, why would
it be lefty righty thing? Changeups tend to
it could be something a little more effective
against the other hand. Yeah. So it could be something like that. But you're right. Maybe ditch. Yeah, we're giving
ditch the fastball some more.
The curveball, only got 11% swinging strike. Yeah. It's well below average for a curveball. McClanahan threw that 23% of the time, so maybe more sliders, harder sliders instead of curves. Who knows?
Yeah, they obviously have the reasons. That stood out to me when I saw that. I was like, because most guys that did the changes you pointed out, obviously they were kind of taking worse pitches and making better pitches, so on and so forth. It makes sense. So when I saw his like ditching such an elite pitch, I was like, what in the world? this is weird.
It's always, and this is one of the points that I made in the article, is a pitch mix change isn't necessarily like automatically a good thing. I made it a pretty bad example out of Chad Cool. Chad Cool.
Not so cool, Chad.
Yeah, not so cool. So Chad Cool was the number four pitcher in terms of switching his pitch mix last year. Chad Cool was number one in 2021 versus 20. So Chad Cool has been a top five pitch mix changer each of the last 2 years, and he's still Chad Cool. So it's like, I give the guy credit for trying different things. He's mixing things up. He's throwing spaghetti at the wall. It's not sticking. Love you, Chad, but your signing with the Nationals doesn't bode well either.
So yeah, anyway. Like I'm saying, I just wanted to like bring it up for a second. I figured we wouldn't have a straight answer, but it just stood out to me. I was wondering if you noticed anything when you look, because it was a great article to see the different pitch mix changes and kind of brought to life different things. And it pointed it out for that stretch, but also, like you said, emphasize the facts when we see news come out this spring. Like Jason Klett makes a chart every year of new pitches that come out in spring and like has like a sheets available. And so that's just something to keep an eye on before we even get this kind of data to make sense of it. And it stood out to me that he ditched such a great pitch. Just like he went from a good pitcher to an elite pitcher by ditching an elite pitch, kind of threw me away, threw me for a curveball there.
And introducing another elite pitch. Like, it is crazy. And like the conclusion I made was like, McClanahan is a top five pitcher. If the shoulder checks out.
Yeah. So. And I guess the last reason I wanted to bring it up is because it's a guy that we're fading. And to see he's got that extra pitch. If somehow he brings that back to the arsenal, it's like, holy crap. Yep. Then again, we're kind of fading him for health reasons, not so much other reasons. So I want to clarify that first too. Yep. All right. That was just a fun little detour here. Like I always recommend checking out all of HQ's work, but I like Ryan's work. It's very, I can understand it. We put it that way. So I'd recommend most people can read it type thing. Let's talk ADP pockets 250 to 300 here. And it's been a fun, fun tour seeing all the different positions we get to target throughout these pockets, Ryan. And in recent ones, there's always been a handful. Like the last pocket was kind of spread out pretty even for the most part. You could kind of pick your poisons. Talent wise might have been different, but just overall numbers of positions. This go round, it is bleak. There's one shortstop. There's three first basemen. You got second base. You got third base. It's mainly an outfield and pitcher position, it feels like, for the most part. And one thing I'll say, there is a lot of multi-position guys here, a lot of them. So another thing to look at in this realm. So what stands out to you when you look at the positions on this one?
Yeah, that's and again, we'll tweet this out from the podcast account tomorrow, but that's why the numbers by position add up to well more than 50, even though it's 50 picks, is because I include all the multi-position guys. You're getting a lot of like your utility, your Ha-Seong Kim, Chris Morel, Rengifo, Nick Gordon, Birdie. Like there's a lot of those guys who kind of play everywhere as utility men. So the outfield pitcher thing really stood out to me. 16 outfielders, no other pocket has more than 14. And that's the first 50 picks. So there's a lot of outfielders going here. And like you said, Bub, a lot of pitchers, really a lot of starting pitchers. This is the pocket that has the second most pitchers outside of 50 to 100. And there are roughly five closers out of the 22 pitchers being taken. Dylan Floro. I should say closers in quotes. Dylan Floro, Sir Anthony Kimbrell, Carlos Estevez, and Daniel Hudson are your five closers. So, again, once you start to get this late in the draft, like position-wise, I mean, yes, you are filling out, especially in like a 15-teamer. These are guys that are starting on your squad. But I don't use once we get this late, I don't use these positions to kind of build out what I want to do early in the draft, especially to ADP can fluctuate so much from 250 to 300. Like there's a wide variety at this point. You're just getting your guys. So
100%. I've been doing a lot of getting my guys in our draft that we have going on right now because we are getting late in that draft, getting close to round 30. Oh, really? I can't wait to discuss this on a future podcast then. This is good. That makes me feel a little better because I've been like...
Estock. Estock killed me.
Estock really? Killed me. I'm a big Paredes fan. I got him in a lot of my drafts right now. And if you're curious, Jason Collette likes him too. So just going to throw that one out there.
Was that pick made? I'm curious. Was that before or after your Collette?
It was after, but I've already been picking him before that. I've been in on Esoc for multiple reasons, and we can discuss that at a later time if you'd like. I can explain why I took him for you. A lot of it's that multi-position eligibility in a format like this, plus the power he brings to the table. So double whammy on that one. But to our 250 to 300 discussion here, the outfielders, yes, there are a lot of outfielders. But when you look at the actual outfielders in play, I will just read them real quick. Brian De La Cruz, Michael Conforto, Trey Boo Boo, that's Trey Mancini for those that don't pay attention to me, Christopher Morel, Lane Thomas, Jesse Winker, Austin Hayes, Charlie Blackman, Austin Meadows, Nick Gordon, Jorge Soler, Brandon Marsh, Garrett Mitchell, Manny Margot, Chris Taylor, and Jake Fraley. What a lot of them don't have in common is a regular starting job. So I just want to throw that out there. So, yes, there are a lot of outfielders here, but in the same context as Ryan said about utility infielders, they're almost like utility outfield, like fourth outfielders. There's a few that stand out as starters here. I'm not going to deny that. Like Lane Thomas is. I consider Manny Margot a starter for the most part if he stays healthy. But there's a bunch. Brandon Marsh, maybe. He should be. We'll see. But there's almost all of them have a question mark next to their name if you really want to get creative with it. So it's not like the warm and fuzzy outfield. So the reason I'm long-winded on this and saying this is we've emphasized over and over again, get your outfielders early. This doesn't mean wait because there's 16 outfielders in this round. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Don't wait to get here because if you need just like one in a 15-team, five outfield, okay, make it your fifth outfielder. If you have to, sure. I'd prefer not to. Make this like your sixth outfielder, seventh outfielder. Be a lot better off in that regard. So I just want to bring that up as well.
Yeah, in the DC we're in, I was filling out my fourth and fifth outfielders from this group, and I got Charlie Blackman and Adam Duvall. So, have serious warts. And, to kind of take it over a little bit more to, like, categories, there's really not much power here at all. But by going by ATC projections, which is what will we'll show on the feed. There's only one guy, Jorge Soler, projected for more than 20 home runs. And again, a lot of that, to your point, Bubba, isn't necessarily like power skill. It's also playing time. Like, yep. Will these guys play enough to get 20 homers? So like in Soler's case, you're paying a major price for that power with his batting average and no steals. So like you're really starting to get low on power. It's funny, the category hitting wise to me that still kind of stands out is batting average.
Yeah,
there are guys that, and maybe it's just like luck of the draw, or this is just where the cookie crumbles or whatever, but you've got like your DJ LeMahieu, your Yandy Diaz, Brendan Rodgers is projected by ATC to hit almost 280. Manny Margot is, I think, a decent batting average guy. You can get power, or you can get batting average from a few sources this late, which again kind of tells me to still kind of, and this has been a big thing for you, Bubba, in your early drafts, is to get that power out early, because it really does seem like you can make up a little bit of batting average here as opposed to power, and there's really not much speed here at all.
I will mention this much, and it really stood with me, and I'll be the first, like everyone, I've heard certain content people go, I don't listen to other podcasts, I don't want to get, you know, information from them, whatever. I listen to podcasts all the time because I work out of my truck. And I was telling Ryan before the show, I listened to the recent Pull Hitter podcast with Rob DiPietro, and he had a couple of great NFBC players, Nikolai Newston, I apologize, he's in our league, our DC right now. And I believe it was him that made the comment. Is there him or is Eaton that was on the show? And it really stuck with me because it made a ton of sense, especially in this environment of baseball. When he's doing his draft, one of the two, he doesn't really even focus on batting average throughout the draft. Like he knows in the back of the head, if he's like he's not getting all the guys that are going to hit 220, he's not foolish in that regard. But he says that's a category that fluctuates so much more than, if a guy's hitting for power, you're going to get more categories already. If a guy's stealing bases, he's probably gonna score a ton of runs. Like you're getting multiple categories in those regards. Obviously to steal bases, you need to get on base. That's an obvious thing, but it really, the way he made it sound was so much better than what I'm saying right now. Just the gist of it is he didn't actually even focus on it too much. And maybe it's cause stuff like this is where I was going with this, is you can get still like batting average still later in the draft where you can't get the power, the run production, all those things as easily as before. So he doesn't even make, and they were like maybe talking more OCs and stuff like that, fab leagues, where he just really didn't even care about batting average. He's just like, I'm just going to get the best guys that are going to get me the counting stats, because in theory, if they're getting me counting stats, they should be hitting for a decent enough batting average. It made sense the way he said it, and it really stood with me. Like, if I have to focus on categories when I'm drafting, maybe I shouldn't really focus as much on batting average as I try to, if that makes sense at all.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports, and support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It does, and it's interesting. And so I prepped, I looked over. So Ray Murphy, who runs our projections at HQ, is putting something out for subscribers tomorrow that talks about how our projection system is now accounting for the shift. And it's funny, one of the tables that he has in there is he looks at the guys whose batting average is projected to improve the most. The highest, like that highest group is generally like 15 to 20 points of batting average. So we think that's a lot, like to go from 250 to 270. Mm-hmm. That's 10 hits over a season. That's crazy. That's like 1 to 2 hits per month. And so I think that kind of, I mean, that even dovetails further on what you were talking about, Bubba.
It can
absolutely vary quite a bit.
Yeah, because like for the whole season, the way you said 10 hits, yeah, because I remember some very smart people have always said like to go from like 230 to 240 or something like that, it was like 2 hits a month or like something stupid like that. Just like a blooper here, a blooper there, and all of a sudden now you're hitting 250 or something. It's just, it changes that much where I think sometimes we basically pay way too much time on a projection for batting average. You can project counting stats pretty well. Batting average, you're just kind of hoping they stick within their norm, I guess. But that's like kind of fluctuate. It can fluctuate a lot more, is what I'm trying to say. So I'm very long-winded on those kind of things. But it really stood out to me, made me think more about when I'm drafting, what am I focusing on? Is it really worth my time to focus on this type thing? And maybe it's not. Maybe it really isn't, like, to the extent that I probably try to focus on. So I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Just real quick, like that. So the devil's advocate argument, and Steve Weimer put out a piece on the FTN Fantasy Guide about this, is at least with last year. So we're kind of looking at two different things, 2023 projections versus results for last year. He found that batting average was one of the scarcer categories in terms of SGP. You're at high elite average guys early in the draft, and again, all these guys have warts. You are paying a price if you do get batting average, and so like this late in the draft. So that's like, so the guys I mentioned, DJ LeMahieu, Yandy Diaz, you're getting like 10 home runs maybe. And so if, and again, this kind of goes for any category, but if you're trying to short batting average, don't overcorrect. I think that happens a lot. Take your Yandy and take your DJ, and then you've got two guys with 10 home runs and like a couple steals, and then that sets you back elsewhere. So it's, again, it's it's a puzzle.
That goes well with what I'm kind of saying, I think, is trying not to, like, you don't have to get 270 from every guy. Like, let's not go there type thing. Don't forget the other counting stats when you're doing it type thing. So yeah, it's a good piece of the puzzle there. If I may, since I think we have a little extra time tonight, not a ton, but a little, you did mention a guy here with batting average, and I was in the middle of Target today, and I was on the clock in a draft, and I really started digging in on him. And I think I drafted him. I don't know if it was our draft or the other draft, but I wanted to get your thoughts on Brendan Rodgers, because I've seen some whispers on Twitter about him lately. Like, how does a dude in Coors Field projected to bat six or so in that lineup? We look at the projections, hitting 277. He's going to be 26 years old this year, still young. Walk rate went up, strikeout rate went down last year. You look at like his barrel rate, went career best, hard hit rate career best. Max EV was still outstanding. What is it from a guy that we used to have such high hopes for that all of a sudden we're just like, you know what? You're not worth my time. I'm confused. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but when I look at this range and think of a guy that could potentially take a next step, how is Brendan Rodgers not like more in that conversation compared to other players that are whispered around everywhere, unless I'm totally missing it? And if I'm wrong, please tell me. But like, I sat there and I was looking at the guys in this range and I'm like, how is Brendan Rodgers just kind of falling down here? It made no sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, so you're kind of speaking to the choir, because I actually took Brendan Rodgers in our DC. I mean, he's
my
second baseman.
It was my other draft. So you, yeah.
During your target run. Yeah. It must've been the other league. Yeah. But I, for those reasons, like, I didn't feel that bad about it. And again,
yeah, neither did I. 15 teamer, I was like, this feels like a gift.
right. And yes, there's the home away splits. Like, there may be some weeks where he's a tough start, but it's just interesting. It feels like Trevor Rodgers. We'll talk about him later.
Stuck with you, man.
That's the, yeah. I probably shouldn't have anyone named Rodgers or, you know, any of my teams. Brendan Rodgers, we forget that the dude, like you said, Bubba, is just 26. Yep. And he's a young 26, or maybe, well, probably he's an old 26. I don't know. He's only played two seasons basically in the majors. Like, Brendan Rodgers was a top 10 prospect coming up, and just had basically his early part of his career derailed by injury. So this isn't a guy, I don't think, who we think he is. And like you just pointed to the improving strikeout rate, the improving barrel rate. all happening at the same time. The better walk rate. He's not everything chasing
you
as much.
See from a young player. Everything you want to see.
Yep. And that's the thing. I think he's still kind of like a young player. Like this, he's, yeah. This will now be his third season. And I think Brendan Rodgers, if you're waiting on second base like I did in our DC, I think he's a fine pick, and I think he's probably like the last second baseman I feel really strong about having as your starter.
And if I have to throw any water on our parade here, is you mentioned the home run splits. I did look at those. They're bad, like really bad, like really
yeah,
bad.
I mean,
They're atrocious. The other thing is he doesn't run. But again, when you're going this late in the draft, you're going to have the warts like we talk about. But what if he runs into five or six steals this year instead of one? What if he now still hits 280 and gets you 20-plus homers because he plays 145 or 50 games? Like, I just wanted to bring him up real quick because it stood out to me. Like, how is this guy falling down here when he hasn't done anything really wrong? Like, he's just, like, he's so young and he's improving. I was confused. I thought we're on the same page on that one.
It is interesting. Rodgers literally does not run. He has never attempted a stolen base in the major leagues.
Yeah. So
for a second baseman, kind of weird. A young
that is baseman. Weird. That is very weird. So that could be the bugaboo, I guess. We'll have to wait and see there. But just wanted to bring him up on the pitching side of things. As you mentioned, a couple of potential closers. It's funny, two of the Philadelphia guys are in this realm. One, Sir Anthony's predicted for 13 saves, and Kimbrel's predicted for 14. That kind of made me laugh a little bit. So pick your poison there. Floro, we've all liked, but we talked about he'll probably get traded, so enjoy the first half that you have of him potentially. And then Daniel Hudson and Carlos Estevez are guys I actually kind of like in this realm for closers. But starting pitching, one of our favorite late round guys is down here, who we will talk about later because you took him from me. But we have a couple other, there's actually some nice spec starters here, I'll say that much.
That's what I noticed when we were filling out our targets for the show and the outline. It was a lot easier for me to pick through the starting pitchers. And I listened to your episode with Toby earlier this week as well. And he picked, you know, both you guys picked names in this group that stood out to me. And I was kind of nodding my head throughout. So I think there are a good number of pitcher speculations that you can go on. I think this is a bit more starting pitcher heavy pocket than it is on the hitter side.
Yeah, most definitely. So I guess just thinking about our previous analysis episode, it's kind of like, okay, get some elite pitching early, fill in your bats early, but make sure you fill in all your bats, and then you can start taking your later pitchers now type thing. It's what it kind of feels like the last couple episodes, this like 200 to 300. Like almost, it's almost like 100 to 200. You just take a pitching break, it feels like, and then come back at 200 to 300. And go. That's just, I'm just rough. Obviously, that changes, but it's kind of the gist of it as it kind of goes.
I generally think, and I'm going to map this out. We'll talk about it a little bit more in our episode when we live stream the labor draft, but that's what I'm going to start to do I'm not going to do another draft until labor, is kind of map that exact thing out and see where I want to go pitcher versus hitter. And it definitely looks like from doing these episodes the last few weeks, I want to have almost all of my hitter spots filled, like maybe an extra outfield or utility open at this point, and then just pound a bunch of these late starters.
Yeah, for sure.
I like the names.
Let's talk about some of the stats though in the starting department. There's actually, I feel like if you can get a 3.5 to a 4 ERA this late, that's not bad. That's pretty strong actually. So there's actually a handful of them here potentially, if you believe on them. Most of them are relievers, I'll say that much. Most of the relievers, but a lot of whips below 1.3. Again, not bad for this range. You're expecting trouble in that regard. Not a ton of strikeouts, though. You're hoping for 150 and not many of those. So what stands out to you when it comes to the main targets and stats here?
You're right. There are, I mean, just projection-wise, like high threes is kind of the standard for starters. And I take pitcher projections with a pretty big grain of salt, but and focus a little more on the actual skills at this point. But there's a lot of good starters. You're right. The strikeouts are, there's no one projected for over 160. Even the guys who I think could take off, like, I don't know. There is like Trevor Rogers projected for 130. He has a potential to go over like 160 if he rebounds. But there's a lot of like Merrill Kelly. There's Sean Manaea, like not a lot of big strikeout guys. And I think that goes I don't know, again, early in this draft, those early starters all have, you know, pretty big strikeout upside, but that's why I want to probably try and get two of those guys early on, because strikeouts really do fall off at this point.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely fall off. And yeah, it's an interesting group of pitcher. A lot of upside, a lot of questions. Like Hunter Brown's here. How many starts does he actually get?
Yep.
Like it's he's an intriguing one in that regard. Does our buddy Jose Barrios bounce back? That's a whole other situation.
Yeah, you've got like the bounce back crew. You've got Barrios, you've got Trevor Rogers, you've got, I'd put Marcus Stroman.
Yeah,
that's fair. In the bounce back crew, probably Manaea in the bounce back crew. So there's a lot of those guys. There's a lot of like young guys who I'm not that high on that could take a next level, like Ronzi Contreras, Michael Kopech. There's that type. So there's a couple different ways to go. I think it's funny how Tyler Anderson is going this late.
I was shocked by that. Absolutely shocked.
Not to say it's wrong. It's just coming off of the season that Tyler Anderson had.
Yeah.
It's wild to see the market basically not count it. And again, the market could be right, but that was an interesting one for me.
Yeah. Very, very interesting on that regards. Let's do some ADP battles if you're ready. Let's have some fun here and let's see what we got right and what we got wrong in this regard here. So I guess I have the first one on the board, and I'm going with two second base outfield eligible players here, and Christopher Morel at an ADP of 265. And yes, these aren't like next to each other in ADP, so I'm probably breaking some sort of code of conduct here. But Nick Gordon at 285, and I mentioned that because I think we both like Nick Gordon quite a bit. So that was interesting to see them 20 picks apart. But we know who Nick Gordon is. We know what he could be, even better if he plays enough. And then we kind of got a taste of who Christopher Morel is last year, 16-10 in 113 games. I guess PT is the question with him. So I'll let you have the floor first before I give my thoughts on this.
I think PT is kind of the question with both of these guys. Like, I'm not sure Nick Gordon has, I think he'll kind of float around and maybe take a game or two off every week, which is a little bit maddening in weekly leagues, at least until someone gets hurt in Minnesota, which again, that will happen. I feel like Morel is a little bit safer on the playing time front. Like, I think he'll beat out Patrick Wisdom at third base.
Bingo.
And in the process of doing that, get second, third outfield.
That's where he wins right there.
It's pretty nice. But I'm going to pivot. I'm going to go Nick Gordon. I can't go against my man. I had Nick Gordon in the baseball forecaster. I put an upside of 20-20 on him. Nick Gordon, huge increase in barrel rate. The power looked fantastic last season. It's not something you would expect from Nick Gordon, but it was there and it looked very real. Nick Gordon only had six steals. He was only 6-for-10 on the base paths, but with the new stolen base rules, I think he's the guy. He's the type of guy who has the speed and he runs. And so I think the effectiveness is going to increase next season more so than it did last year. I think he's the prime kind of candidate who's going to run more and be a little bit more successful on the base pass. So he's not without his warts. Nick Gordon has a 15% swing strike rate, a chase of 43. Like, the plate skills are still pretty iffy. He's pretty bad against left-handed hitters or left-handed pitching. So I don't know how often he starts against lefties, and he might hit ninth when he does. But I think the power speed potential with Nick Gordon is too good to pass up. I think the ceiling is a lot higher than it is with Morel.
Yeah, you're probably right there. I'm going to go Morel still, which sucks because I do like Nick Gordon quite a bit. I actually took Morel in our DC that we're in. I love the idea of him potentially gaining the third base. So we have corner, MI, and outfielder. That's almost unicorn-esque when it comes to DC formats.
Yeah, that's huge in a DC.
That does magical things. But what I also love about him is we saw even in his like 113 games, he had 16-10, hit 235. He's not going to be the average guy. I think Gordon's definitely going to get him in like a batting average concept. But power and speed, I think, especially power for sure. I take Morel over Gordon. Like, a 13.4% barrel rate last year was pretty darn impressive for Morel in his first debut. Yeah, I'll take him and the upside that he brings to the table. He's even showcased the power in the minors and more speed actually in the minors. So maybe that'll translate to the bigs too. I like them both, but I'll go Christopher Morel. The biggest reason I did this one is because I hadn't dug into him too much until like a week ago. And I just wanted to bring him up on the show because I think he needs a little more love if he is going to get third base there as well.
Yeah. So you took, I'm looking at our draft, you took Morel before Brendan Rodgers even.
Yeah.
So you're Morel guy.
I wanted the flexibility and for that reason.
And you already had, so this is different, you know, who cares about our teams, but just a draft, you know, a team construction thing. Like I said, I didn't have a second baseman, so I want someone with a little bit more playing time, stability, whereas you have Thairo Estrada already, who you could move around as well. But
And Isak.
Yeah, don't rub that one in. But
so I have options. Second basemans. Yes, I have options. So what you got?
All right, for mine, we're going two guys who are pretty much going, they're going three picks apart. Two different kinds of pitchers. You got Merrill Kelly versus my former boy, Trevor Rodgers.
You can't quit him.
I don't know if I can. What's your take on these two, man?
I'm going
before with, I go in.
Before you profess your love for Trevor Rodgers again, I'm going to go with Merrill Kelly, and it's not a sexy, flashy pick at all. If you want like the ceiling play, it's definitely going to be Trevor Rodgers. I'll say that a million times out of a million. Strikeout upside is tremendous with Trevor Rodgers. It's a matter of how broken do you think he is. Where Merrill Kelly, he can eat innings for you. When he's eating those innings, he usually has decent ratios. They've been suspect at times, so I'll admit that. Doesn't have the strikeout ability that Trevor Rodgers does, but the ability to go deep in the games give him more leverage for wins as well, if you really want to pinpoint that. But to get a guy that could potentially get you 185-plus innings this late in the draft is pretty tremendous. If he does bring the ratios into play, it makes him even more tremendous. Again, it's Merrill Kelly. We wouldn't be shocked if it's no ratios or good ratios. It could go either way with him. He will not get you the strikeouts, though. So if you need strikeouts, you go Trevor Rodgers. I will 100% admit that. At the same time, Merrill Kelly is going to have that job in the rotation all year unless he gets hurt. Where Trevor Rodgers, there's a guy named Braxton Garrett sitting there and some other guys. So I'm going Merrill Kelly.
That's a pretty convincing case. I mean, every contextual factor would lean Merrill Kelly. Also, I mean, just the team, like Arizona. Arizona's not great, but Arizona could score some runs by the end of last year. Don't have the best bullpen out there, but like I'd probably take Kelly in the wins department over Trevor Rodgers. I with Trevor Rodgers, I'm going with the ceiling. I can't, somewhere in Trevor Rodgers' arm is that 2021 season. Like that was a legitimate breakout supported by the skills. And the interesting thing that we saw with Trevor Rodgers far after I cut him on all of my teams was the way he looked after he had, I think, a phantom back injury or whatever they called it, basically went down to the minors to reset everything in the middle of the season last year. Trevor Rodgers came back and regained his control in the second half, regained the ground ball tilt in the second half. 3.31 expected ERA from HQ for Trevor Rodgers in the second half to a 5.31 ERA. I just think Trevor Rodgers, who was going in the sixth round by yours truly last year, I think there's something there. I think it's still there. He's young enough to get back to that. And that's why I'm going with the ceiling, knowing that Kelly is the safer play.
Yeah, no, it's a ceiling versus safe play for sure. Mine, I think we both know where we're both going on this one, but I had to bring it up and it works well with the comments you made earlier. How's Tyler Anderson going right here? So Tyler Anderson, ADP 283 versus Carlos Carrasco at 285. I'll let you have the floor on this one.
Carrasco, Carlos Carrasco. And again, so I looked it up since I made that comment about Tyler Anderson. Mm-hmm. Maybe this should be a Bloom board. I cannot figure out how I got 257 ERA and a one flat whip has an ADP of 275. I'd be curious to see how many pitchers over the last 10 years, starting pitchers, that has actually happened to. I will look that up probably right after this show and tweet that out because I cannot think there are that many. So given that, Tyler Anderson is, right? So there are reasons for Tyler Anderson dropping. Obviously, the skills did not support that 257 surface ERA. He was on the LA pitching machine that we all know is the Dodgers. That is now gone. He's on the Angels, who haven't produced a legitimate starting pitcher outside of Shohei Ohtani in quite some time. I know, and then we had a great episode with Dan Preppis, if I'm pronouncing that right. There is some promise in the Angels rotation. I don't think Anderson is one of those. So Carrasco for me, like Carrasco, I for the life of me, I cannot figure out why Carlos Carrasco is going this late.
It's crazy. So
it's Carrasco pretty easily for me. Yeah. Like Carrasco has basically every skill looks like he should be going about 100 picks earlier.
Yeah, what I'll say is Carrasco easy for me, and people that listen to either one of us long enough should have known that ahead of time, but it was fun because of the aforementioned, the previously mentioned stats of Tyler Anderson that Ryan mentioned that like stand out like, huh, that's odd. Because with Carrasco, it's like he's consistently brought you good ratios outside of like hiccups in 19 and 21 where he's kind of like banged up a little bit. When he's been healthy, he's literally giving you sub four ERAs all the time. 152 innings, he's probably not the 200 inning guy again, where we saw back-to-back seasons where Anderson went 167, 178. So maybe that's a little plus. Wouldn't do it for me. But at this point in the draft, I'm not caring as much. Like I like Merrill Kelly's innings, but when you're looking at Anderson versus Carrasco, a little different. Carrasco's got more strikeout upside. You've mentioned the two pitches are just dominant with Carrasco. There's just a ton of things when it comes to these two guys that I only did this one because I knew our answers would be easy, but I wanted to point out how much Carrasco stands out in this range compared to other guys around him. And it feels very strange for sure. So that was the whole reason behind this one.
Just real quick on Carrasco too. So three of the main things that I look at for pitchers are strikeout minus walk, which is huge, swinging strike rate. And I look at ball percentage, which is just how many percentage of pitches that are balls. There were 17 pitchers, starting pitchers last season, 100 innings minimum, that did all three of those at an above average rate. 17. All but five are going in the first, or all but six are going in the first 10 rounds. You've got Jeffrey Springs at 162 ADP. Our boy, Jomo, Jordan Montgomery, 163. Mm-hmm. Drew Rasmussen. Tony Gonsolin, my man Nate Eovaldi, Sean Manaea, and Carlos Carrasco. Manaea and Carrasco are the only ones going outside the top 250 who are above average in all three of those, strikeout minus walk, swinging strike, and ball percentage. And that just kind of backs up. Like, these are the foundational pitching skills that I like to look at, and he checks all those boxes. So.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, and the ADP baffles me. It's baffled me all offseason. Who's your final ADP debate?
Who we got? Oh, Jesse Winker, Austin Hayes. I thought this was interesting because they have pretty much identical ATC projections, identical ADP. They're both going 270, both projected to hit 250 with like 18 home runs. And we mentioned earlier how no one's projected over 20, and the only one other than Jorge Soler, who's a major batting average drain. The thing with Winker and Austin Hayes is they're not a batting average drain, and there I think there's even upside in those 18 home runs. So I think if you want that kind of more like traditional three category guy, these are two guys who you're going to pick between. And I think, and this is how I'll kind of frame the question to you, is who do you want? You've got Winker, who has shown more in the past coming off a really terrible season, versus Austin Hayes has kind of been a more of like a Eddie Eddie type.
Yeah, this one's tricky. Like, I kind of want to lean Winker at this point in the draft. Like, we talk about taking our shots, and it makes me want to go with the Winker world, because if you look at last year's numbers, like, he still walked 15% of the time, which is great. The strikeout rate was up a little bit, but the BABIP was 251, by far the worst of his career. So even a little bump there, average will come back up to maybe 240-ish, hopefully. And maybe that gives him three or four more home runs along the way, because he's in a much better ballpark. When I had John Fish doing the Brewers preview, he was talking about there was some video on Twitter showing all of the fly balls that went to like the warning tracker within like 15 feet of the wall in Seattle.
Winker hit.
It stood out like a sore thumb. And we've established through different interviews this past year that Winker had a little bit of an emotional situation in Seattle. I don't know if it was mentally or just with the team or both or who knows. Maybe that was wearing on him. I don't know. I'm speculating because the fall that he had.
That was well documented. Yeah,
without like a major injury report. Like he had his banged up, but nothing like so crazy that had his barrel rate drop like 5%. His hard hit rate dropped so much. Like just massive drop-offs for not a clear injury. I'm willing to foresee kind of a bounce back in that scenario, especially hitting in Milwaukee. We'll see. Austin Hayes with that fence in left field is always terrifying for any hitter. He'll run a little more than Winker, but there's also a handful, and it's same for Milwaukee if you want to be real stingy. But in Baltimore, there's a handful of young outfielders that are chomping at the bit to platoon with Austin Hayes. So that is a little bit of a concern. And, you know, Winker is supposed to be DHing, so the outfielders there might not be as big of an issue. Still could be some platooning. All that being said, I'm going to give Winker the chance and of a bounce back between these two guys. I'm not all in on Winker in general in drafts, but in this scenario, I go Winker.
Yeah, the park, like you said, the park was terrible last year. The situation, for whatever reason, was that Jesse Winker. So I'm going to list his barrel rate each of the last three seasons. Yeah,
that's crazy.
13.5%. Yeah, in the short season. 11% and then 7.6% last year. You think like that's a decline. Technically it is. Jesse Winker's much, much more likely to rebound to what we saw in 2020 and 21, especially in that park. And the other interesting thing is despite all the struggles for Winker last year, he did not press at all at the plate. Posted a career best chase rate, only chased 22% of the time, which is pretty elite, 8% swinging strike. Like the plate discipline was intact despite the struggles, which I think is a really good sign. And so you get him in a new environment, better park. I think Winker pretty easily is the guy over Hayes who just hasn't shown pretty much anywhere near the power that Winker has. And again, roughly same batting average guy. So it's Winker pretty easy for me.
Yep. We're on the same page there. Let's talk targets. We've already talked about a handful of these guys to begin with, but your first target here, my friend, is a very good one, of course.
Yep, it's Nick Gordon. Again, got to stick to my man. So already listed out the reasons before, so I won't rehash those, but Nick Gordon is my guy.
Yeah, for me, my first one is Justin Steele. I've talked about him a million times, so many times that people that I draft with now make it almost impossible for me to roster Justin Steele. So I love you all for that. I don't have very many shares this year, unfortunately. The biggest argument people will give is a two-pitch guy. Well, those two pitches were pretty darn dominant. I'll throw that one out there for you. And we've seen that pitchers these days can work off of two pitches pretty well. Like, you know, no one complains about Spencer Strider doing it, but they're going to complain about Justin Steele doing it. Pick your poison, people. Like, you gotta pick your poison. You either can do it or you can't. You can't pick which. Like, I know Steele is not Strider. I'm not stupid. But
oh no, you said it.
Yeah. Clip it, put it out there, let him have it. The biggest thing I'd say is the walks with Steele, because he had almost a 29% strikeout rate since June 29th, when he became a staple in the rotation, over his last 10 starts, basically, but almost a 10% walk rate also. So that's less than ideal. But you look at him, he limits the hard contact, he limits the damage in that regard. Keeps the ball in the ballpark, only 3 home runs. He has 65 Ks in 54 innings. That is ridiculous. 1.49 ERA, even a 3.11 xFIP. I know, so he's outperforming in a big way. I'll still take it. I just love what he can bring. He's young. He's developing. He got better as he changed the pitch mix as the season went on. And then they kind of slowed him down to temper his innings to get him ready for this season. So it was like the Cubs were like, we want you to be a part of this next year. Let's not risk anything. Let's do it. So he's a guy I love. But again, thank all you listeners for paying attention to the shows, because I don't have very many shares at all.
Take them all from you. He was in my speculator. Steele was in my speculator article this week because of that pitch mix change. And again, not just the change, but the change with
the production of the pitches.
Yeah, exactly. In the second half. So
yeah, they're beautiful. I like it. Subscribe to HQ. You can see the percentages Brian's talking about. And then you'll understand why I like him so much. Yes.
All right, Manny Margot. I think if you're going outfield here, I think Manny Margot is like a modest 5 category guy who's going to play every day, or at least most days. And you and Jason were talking about that on your Rays episode. But I think, you know, the projection of 260, 10 homers, 15 steals, like, feels about right. And that just comes out to a really good player over, you know, for where Manny Margot is being drafted. And again, not too worried about the platoon situation. Maybe he hits lower in the order against righties in Tampa, but, and again, and there's not much. So, like, I mean, there, again, everyone has warts here. There's not much, like, I'll admit, there's not much power ceiling with Manny Margot. Like, the barrel rate has not been there throughout his career. So I don't think you're getting much more than like 10, 15. But you're also getting those 10, 15 bags with a decent average. So that works for me.
Yeah, I like Margot a ton. I've drafted him in many places in my DC formats. I think if he plays 140 games, which is an if, because we haven't seen it enough, but he's a 15-15 guy, which is tremendous at this point in the draft. So I'm with you on that big time. My next one, and I wanted to be different here because Ryan took the best three anyways, but I wanted to kind of bring to light some stuff on Yoán Moncada. I talked with Jorge Montanez that I work with at Gaining the Edge in our text message we have. He brought up some very good points to at least acknowledge that the price might not be fair for Moncada. Similar to Brendan Rodgers, like we discussed, with Moncada, he is going to be 28 this year, so a little older. But if you look at what's taken place since that COVID year where we knew we had bad COVID in 2020, 2021 still 14 homers, 3 steals, so he didn't run a lot. And then 12 homers, 2 steals last year, hit 212. BABIP 265, which was atrocious. We know that for a fact. But things that looked good. Each of the last 3 years since COVID, his barrel rate has improved from 6.2 to 8.2 to 9.8. His max EV was still 111.5, which is very, very respectable. The hard hit rate went up from 2020 to from 2021, when dropped a little bit last year. Not ideal. But what I'm trying to point out is he's not far off from the player we used to love. So I guess if anybody can tweak a little more and if he can stay healthy, it could be a gift here. Is it a main play? No. But I think if you're looking for late third basemans or a backup third baseman in a DC, I think he's a very strong backup option, because if he just finds that just a little next level, not even the next level, just a little bit, gets closer to that guy, we could get you 15 to 20 home runs and maybe steal you 5-6 bases, you're going to be very happy with that. And I think that's in that guy somewhere. He's only 28, like I said. So I wouldn't get – basically what the whole point is, don't give up on Moncada just yet. That's my point.
Yeah. We saw what he was capable of doing. I'm always a little skeptical, like, when your career year is 2019, just because that was happy fun ball year.
Good point.
But – yeah, I get it. I mean, you almost have to throw out last season with Moncada. It was weird. He was healthy, well, outside of COVID, injury-wise, 2020 and 2021, and then last year had oblique and I think strained, like, both of his hamstrings.
Yeah, he was a mess last year. Pretty brutal. All the White Sox were. Like, whoever's athletic trainer is there or something should be fired with La Russa. Like, all you gone.
Or maybe was. That's a risk. Like, Mike Carter, if you're listening, That lineup's hanging by a thread. Tim Anderson, Lubov, Moncada, Eloy. Like,
you know, they're all one soft tissue injury away
from either being like a really good lineup or not. So interesting.
Okay, preach about Carlos Carrasco.
I already did. and Toby talked about Manaea earlier this week, but I will go with Sean Manaea as a backup target here. I know, Bubba, like, as a Giants fan, you might like to hear that. I don't know how sold you are on Manaea, but again, those three core skills that I'm looking at, strikeout minus walk, swing, strike, and ball percentage, Manaea checks those boxes. He's going to San Francisco, which is always a good thing. And the price is fantastic. So I'm happy to grab Manaea this late in drafts.
Yeah, I've been going back and forth on him because I've always just been, let's stack against Manaea and DFS.
Trying to convince you, man. We're trying to convince
you. Trust me, hearing you, Toby, and a couple other really people I respect in the analysis game, like, it's the numbers don't lie, like, what you guys are talking about, but it's just like you watch this guy pitch, and it seems like when the time you tune in, it just gets disgusting quick. So but at this point in the draft, I don't hate it. That's the thing. Like, you're not paying a premium for him. He'd be a guy, honestly, not even just a DC format. He'd be like a dude in an OC I wouldn't mind taking after around like 25, just because if it doesn't work, he's an easy drop, but he could be that guy that kind of moves up by the time the season's over and finishes better than like around 25 player, if that makes sense. So he's an interesting one. I'll admit it. He's an interesting one. Not in love with it, but interesting.
We talked about my past with Trevor Rogers in labor last year. I had three closers. I was good in saves. Trade deadline hits. I need starting pitching badly. I trade Kenley Jansen for Sean Manaea. Sean Manaea throws like a 6 ERA, so I lose Jansen. And I also had Josh Hader on my team. And that was the exact same time when Josh Hader did his Josh Hader things. And so I then had one closer and Sean Manaea. And that was depressing.
Oof. That is fantasy baseball in a nutshell, folks. My third target here would be Zach Eflin. It's almost like similar to the Manaea thing, honestly. Like the stuff you mentioned with him, it's a veteran going to a new place where they really know how to work pitching. Great ballpark, period, to pitch in. But the pitch mix that he can bring to the table there, the ability to hopefully get you 140, 150 innings, and hopefully what they can develop, the way they like to utilize their, you know, fastball, off-speed pitch mixes in Tampa Bay, could be a nice thing for Eflin, and you're getting them dirt cheap. And they gave him the biggest salary in Rays history. Take that as you wish. Yeah. So they want him there, and they want to utilize him as much as possible because you do have question marks with McClanahan. You have Springs and Rasmussen, but how many innings are they going to go? Like, they're expecting Eflin to be that horse for, like, he's their Charlie Morton. Like, go, just go. And I'm really curious to see how that pans out for him. And the last thing I'll mention is he's still only 29. He's not an old pitcher. He feels like he's been around forever, but he's young. So there might be another, like, not no way a Cy Young level to him, but at least a very respectable late starter on your fantasy team. So he stands out for me as well. That's why this range, like, there's a bunch of pitchers you can see being very serviceable in this range.
The interesting thing with Eflin, and not just the kind of blindly he's on the Rays must be great signing, which there's a lot of validity to that, is like one of my questions with Eflin at the end of the year, he was hurt. I mean, yeah, he had that knee injury and was basically pitching out of the bullpen. And to your point, but before Tampa Bay, to despite that, put the kind of coin that they put out for Eflin, like that shows me that Tampa is at least confident in Zach Eflin's health. Yeah. So I think from a health standpoint, like, we have to trust Tampa's staff, and like he cleared all those hurdles, and I would think Eflin's knee is probably fine. So yep. I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
Let's talk about a fade for each of us here. Mine will be simple. I'll keep it short and sweet. Michael Kopech, I've been loud saying I'm fading him until he can prove otherwise. Velocity was down a ton last year. Strikeout rate down a ton last year. Just looks broken right now. He's still young. It can be fixed. I get it. I'm not denying any of that, but he's 100% a prove it to me guy, because he has not shown me any signs of making it happen, where some other guys we talked about have shown signs of making it potentially happen. Kopech has not. So I am out until otherwise told.
I've got Garrett Whitlock because I want to use him as an example of using of just, you know, guys who have split time as a starter and reliever. They can be two different pitchers out of the rotation in the bullpen. Garrett Whitlock, I think, is a prime example. Projection systems may or may not pick this up depending on which system you're using. Garrett Whitlock as a starter last year, 18% K-minus walk, 26% K-minus walk as a reliever. Garrett Whitlock as a starter last year, your ERA estimators are around a 3.6 ERA, which is, you know, decent. As a reliever, Garrett Whitlock's ERA indicators, both FIP and XFIP, were under 3. So if Garrett Whitlock is in the rotation, do not assume that reliever skills version of Garrett Whitlock will translate to the rotation. I think that's a big kind of thing that gets overlooked a lot. And there's not really a path for Garrett Whitlock for saves with the signing of Jansen. If he does go to the rotation again, he's not as skilled as what we saw last year. And he hasn't thrown, I believe he hasn't thrown 90 professional innings in a season yet. So, so it's just like, I think like Matt Brash is another example of this, someone who was terrible in the rotation last year, came back in the second half as a reliever and was lights out, kind of leaned into his slider and was nuts. Just kind of be careful with those kind of hybrid guys, or at least guys that switched roles from rotation to starter last year when you're looking at the season long skills.
It's a great point. Whitlock's been nasty, but it only works in certain spots. So I like that one quite a bit. All right, got a couple listener questions, and then we'll head on out of here on this one. Little Book of Calm, he asks, the Bat X seems to love Moncada this year. Oh, I didn't even realize he did this. His projected line of 241, 18 homers, 3 steals, 120 runs and RBIs, and 555 plate appearances project him as an $8 player and third base 16. He's being drafted as third base 26. Throwing that he's 27, dealt with long COVID, and it already has a 25-10 season. Are you guys interested? Well, yes, I am, Little Book of Calm. You basically echoed everything I was thinking of looking for potential value. So, yes, I am. You are a smart man.
Words out of his mouth.
Yeah, that's like perfect right there.
Before the show.
I didn't even realize it. I just take pictures and save them for later. I don't even read the questions. So, there you go. Winner, 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 winner. Our other questions from buddy MSSMMS79. There are a few interesting catchers in this range. Who do you like and who do you kick out of this group? Okay, catchers we are discussing in this range. Logan O'Hop, Yasmani Grandal, Eric Haas. This is actually an interesting group of catchers, I'll be honest. I'll let you have the floor first, and then I will follow up on this one.
And so there is a fourth. Shea Langeliers is technically
he'll get it. Yeah.
He'll get it very. And I've taken Langeliers, I think, in a couple drafts as my second catcher, maybe even third sometimes.
He's their starter.
He's their starter. So he's a starter in Oakland, and he will get catcher eligibility probably by the third week of the season. So that is kind of a little tip. Like if your draft software and NFBC, he shows up as UT only. That's going to change, and Langeliers will be a catcher. So that's interesting. Of that group, I actually had this decision to make in our current DC. I took Yasmani Grandal over Eric Haas as my second catcher. Didn't want to wait that long, to be honest. I took Real Muto in the second round and then waited that long to get my second catcher. But I'm just banking on the rebound with Grandal. Like, I just can't, at this price, I can't be convinced that all of a sudden he's just done like that quickly. You've got a pretty long track record of Grandal being a pretty damn good fantasy catcher on a lineup that, again, we just talked about him, but if Chicago stays healthy, could work out really well. DH is a little bit as well. So Grandal would be my pick. I will say, like, there's a good case to be made for O'Hoppy as well, just because of the pedigree. I think Grandal is the pick here in catchers. It's not a bad pocket to fill out your second catcher.
It's not for your second catcher. If this is your first catcher, I pray for you. That's all I'm going to say. Second catcher, yes. And I'm glad you mentioned the Grandal thing, because I was actually having a discussion off air with someone earlier today about similar to what you said. It's like, I know it was really bad last year, but is this drop in ADP for the talent that we've seen from him recently this justified? Like, I know he could, maybe he is broken and this is who he is now, and then we'll feel the wrath, but it was one horrific season after a lot of really good seasons. Like there's, it's tough to give up on it that quick. So I completely agree with you that and this is why I do a lot of early drafts. That's what we all do. Like, you start seeing these things stand out more and more. It makes you kind of want to dig in on them more before the hardcore drafts begin. Like, is this worth something? So I'm with you on the Grandal thing 100%. Early in draft season, I was all in on Eric Haas. The more I researched, the more I've talked to people, the more I've listened to people, I've kind of toned it back a little bit on him. Don't mind him as like a catcher three if you need him, but I'm not as in love as going to battle with him every time out. And then I like your Langeliers thing. I agree with that. O'Hoppy is, or it's O'Hop, O'Hoppy. I don't know what it is, but
I think it's Hoppy.
Okay. It's like a good beer. The thing with me is I love the talent. I think I've talked about him on this show or other shows doing catcher stuff. I have many shares of him already. I've toned it back a tad ever since talking with Daniel Prepas on the Angels podcast, because he mentioned a lot of things from the beat writers and stuff he's been hearing, is that the Angels do like him a lot, but they still like Stassi a lot. Nevin likes Stassi a lot. Mm-hmm. And there's a good chance that O'Hoppy still starts the year in AAA until they're ready to give him the full role. They don't want him necessarily to be the backup to type situation. So in draft and holds, I like him as a third catcher still because he's going to get run eventually. And if the skills keep translating, it'll be great. Question is, when does that happen? Is it opening day? Is it June? Is it August? That's the question with a hoppy. So I've kind of toned back my expectations there. So I just wanted to kind of mention that about him, that I think the talent is legit. If I knew he was starting out the gate, I'd probably go a hoppy right there because I think he is that good. He also probably wouldn't be getting drafted right here either. So that's my two cents on that. So yeah, I'm with you on Grandal. I think that's where we stand on that one. All right, Ryan, another episode in the books of Bubba and the Bloom. Final thoughts as we are through 300 picks of analysis. Like, that's like our fourth pocket of ADB.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it's a struggle, but you got to dig to find the beauty in a lot of these, especially hitters. So, but it's a dig worth digging because I kind of say this every week, but these are the picks that make you the money, in the draft. So, well, I think we'll do one more kind of like 300 plus next Thursday, mm-hmm. but until then, we will see each other Super Bowl night.
Mm-hmm. And you guys can see us too. Don't worry. And a special guest will be joining us. And we'll tweet that out on Sunday. We'll keep it a little suspense till Sunday. And we're going to be doing something fun, interactive, to kick off the official start. Not for us, because baseball season never ends for us. But for all the others out there that believe in football being the dominant sport, baseball officially ends when the clock strikes midnight on the Super mm-hmm. Bowl. So we will be here for you to kick things off, and it's going to be glorious. It's going to be an electric factory. I do not doubt that one second when you find out our guest. And let's just say we might not be the underdogs in this situation. So I'm just going to throw it out there. It'll be a lot of fun. But until then, until Sunday, you can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and I am at BD Intric. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 40. Catch you guys next time.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.